Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Adulting with Autism podcast with me, your host, Tyler Grant. In this episode, I'm talking with Anna, and we're talking about medication, growing up with autism, life after autism, and generally adulting with autism. She's a lot further along in this whole adult thing than I am, so it's great to have a perspective of someone who is doing the things that we're all told we're supposed to be doing. So I've done the edit a bit differently with this one as well. I've left in all the processing moments of our brains. There's a lot of ums, a lot of ahs. Let me know if you like it or not, because I just want to give an accurate representation of what it's like to be autistic. Trying to have a conversation with one of us, it does take us a bit of a while to think about what we're saying and process things. So I haven't cut that out, but if it's pure annoying and you're like, you can't edit this, please edit this, then drop me a comment and let me know. Either DM me on Instagram, or if you're listening on iTunes, let me know there. Also, if you are listening on iTunes or YouTube, can you like and rate the podcast just to, you know, help get it out there? Hoping to get some other. Hoping to get some other guests on that can help us and provide some actionable content other than these conversations that we're having. These have been great and there are a couple more to come. So if you do want to be involved and do an interview, then drop me a message on Instagram. The Instagram is Adulting with Autism, shocker. My personal Instagram is TYLGRNT, but that's enough from me. We'll just get into this episode, and as always, let me know what you think.
So hi everybody, my name is Anna. I'm from the Netherlands. I am 30 years old. I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome when I was 21. What else do you want to know?
So we'll start with your diagnosis. With it happening in adulthood, how did it come about?
Well, it was from a very early age obvious to my parents that something was different about me. My mother had always worked with young children, and I had an older sister, so she could very clearly see that I developed in a different pace than most children do. But our family was in good harmony, and my mom just knew how to handle me, and my dad and my sister knew also. We had a quiet life. We didn't do too many crazy things, so I would just I would just tag along, and I was a little different than most kids, maybe a little bit more anxious, more nervous, but also just a funny cheeky girl, maybe. Stop looking at me. My boyfriend is looking at me. Annoys the shit out of me. Sorry. But in school, I started to have some difficulties. I went to a regular school because obviously I didn't have my diagnosis yet. And I didn't make many friends. I was just, but I was very outspoken, very outgoing, but somehow I was just not really, mingling with the others. That was kindergarten, and then we went I went to primary school. Mm-hmm. And the first year I tagged along pretty well because I was already able to read and write, so that was not a problem. But then in the second grade I was starting to drift. I was not able to focus anymore. And I was in a very big classroom with 30 other children, and it was just too loud and too noisy, and I just could not focus on my schoolwork. So I just started to refuse to start working, and the teacher would like motivate me and talk to me, come on, do your work. And I would just like cross my arms around my chest and say, no, I don't want to. And I would just completely refuse everything. I guess because I was just too overwhelmed by the big classrooms and all the children. And yeah, so I was mostly staring out the window. I don't know the English word for it, but I had my thumb in my mouth the whole time.
Yeah, you suck your thumb. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And in Dutch we say thumbing.
Yeah, that does not mean the same in English.
Yeah. What?
This does not mean the same in English.
No. Oh. Okay. Well, let's drop that then. Explain later what it means. I was also how do you say that? Giving a big mouth?
Just chatting back.
I'm sorry?
Just like answering back to teachers and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would be like, no, I don't want to, and I'm not gonna do it. And they started to get annoyed by me by then a little bit. And I was just constantly dreaming in classroom and refusing to work. And that sort of stayed like that throughout whole primary school. I was very behind on things, and I was getting, I don't know the correct English word. For a young child, you would say cheeky.
Yeah.
When you I don't know how to say it.
Just have an attitude.
Have an attitude, but not like completely rude or impolite, but I was not swearing or anything, but just, I don't know, I had an attitude a little bit, I guess, and they started to punish me for that, and I was not allowed to sit in the classroom anymore. And my parents tried to talk with school a lot, but that they weren't really, how do you say that, helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to see a psychologist, and they gave my parents therapy because they thought it was because how they raised me, because they were just too open and too free with me. But my sister was a model student, and I wasn't. So it was just they weren't willing to help me out, and they just punished me and told the other children that they just had to let me be. And I was just most of the time on my own in the hall of the school. So I was always I was also getting very behind on things. And in the meanwhile, I got tested a lot. My intelligence was tested because they just wanted to know if I was not just simply very dumb, which I turned out wasn't. And primary school been kind of a struggle, and nothing came out of the tests. They said that I was too good at making contact to have something like autism. They just blamed it on how I was raised, but I was raised just fine. So that was a little difficult. Also, my motory skills were very off. I was not allowed, I was not able to get along with gym classes. I was not able to ride my bike until I was 8 years old. So a lot of things were a little bit off. And at the end of primary school, it was becoming problematic in the sense that I was getting, very sad, very down. I wouldn't say depressed, but I was not a very cheerful child anymore, because the way the teachers and some of the parents of the children spoke about me. And they say that I was a bad influence to their own children because I was not working hard in class, and I was just having an attitude too much. Then I went to high school.
I was going to ask about high school, because we talked about primary school. What happened next?
The school system is obviously a little different here. You start high school when you are 12. I was a young student, so I was 11, and I was emotionally and also physically very behind on my classmates. I was I hit puberty very late, so while the other girls in my class were already wearing makeup and going to parties, I was still at home drawing my childish drawings and playing with my dolls and Barbies and everything. I was just very, I did not fit in very well. Most of the time I had one friend or no friends. And that didn't really bother me that much, because I didn't really see any girls that I would want to be friends with. They were just so different than me. And I was still watching Pokemon and cartoons, and all the other girls were already having boyfriends and boobs, and I was not even going near that. So, learning was also difficult. It was just 5 days of school until like 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on the schedule of that day. And after that, I would just be too tired for my homework. So the first 3 years were kind of okay. My mom was helping me with planning my homework. She would pack my bag. She would prepare my lunch for school. So all of that was already off my shoulders. She would watch my bedtimes. I needed a lot of sleep. Let's see. The first 3 years were pretty okay, I guess. I got good grades, but also, things were going less and less better. Things were going, worse. I didn't want to make my homework anymore. I was just too overstimulated, overwhelmed. Some kids in class were mean to me. They said that they bullied me a little bit. I mean, not too much, but I was completely excluded. Is that the word? Excluded?
Excluded? Yeah.
Excluded. Yeah. Sorry. So, I didn't really had a lot of fun there. I didn't go to the school parties because I would totally not know what the hell I was going to do there. So yeah, it was not a really great time. So I went from the level of school, you have certain levels.
School grade.
No, it's not a year. It's like an intensity level, how difficult it is.
Anyway,
I stepped back there I would say I'm going to call it level because I was just not getting the grades to pass for that anymore.
Yeah.
And, school was very cooperative and they spoke with my parents a lot, and there was a really close line between them and my parents, and they updated each other. And with a lot of help from my mother, I graduated there. I was still seeing psychologists and everything, but, by then I had my first diagnosis when I was 14 years old, which is NLD. Have you heard of it? It's nonverbal learning disability.
No, I've not heard of that actually. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
It's a learning disorder. It's actually, it comes pretty close to Asperger's if you look at, on the behavior, let's say. But I was very strong. But I had poor motory skills. I was not good at socializing. I was very focused on routines and everything. I was difficult with eating and, well, the whole autism package.
Yeah.
But NLD is kind of, it's a learning disorder, and it's more focused on learning than on behavior, which is more going into the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And also because when my intelligence was tested, my IQ was very, uneven.
Yeah.
My verbal IQ was a lot higher than my performal IQ. Is that the word? Performal? Well, that's a Dutch word.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying, but I don't know the English word myself.
No, so there was a very big level of difference in my... capacities. So, yeah. And that mostly points out a learning disorder. So then that was the first diagnosis, and that, it's not a wrong diagnosis, I think, but it's just not covering the whole thing for me. So, then I went to do a sort of study, but it's not university. That was way out of my league back then, and still. And so it was to be a teacher's assistant.
Yeah.
It was 3 years. It was quite a rough time. I was really angry at the world. I was angry at my classmates. I was angry at the school I was going to, angry at the teachers. I was really just pushing everybody away, just kicking everybody out. That I was just really frustrated about the way my life was, and about that I was not having friends, and I didn't have anything to do in the weekends, and I was just still living with my parents, and I just felt so different from everybody else. And also the school I was going to, I felt that it was way too easy for me, and that also made me angry. So I was also getting some help with a lot of things. You have certain facilities for people who are disabled in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So there was, I was getting help with graduating that study, and eventually I made it, and then I went to the Art Academy, and I studied there for 2 years, but that turned out to be way too much work for me, way too stressful, too much, it took too much time, it took too much effort. Although the things I had to study were actually not that difficult for me, but it was just the whole study altogether that made it just way too big for me.
Yeah. So
I dropped out.
Do you think that if there were more accommodations, or if it was a bit more flexible, that you'd have stayed longer?
I don't know. Maybe it was also just me not being mature enough for it.
Yeah.
I still lived at my parents. I was 20, so that's not really weird. But my parents just helped me out with a lot of things. And my sister even helped me out a lot. She went to university, and that was all that all went very smooth for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she had a lot of time when she could help me with my homework and plan in my assignments. And at some point, the school even suggested that I was going to have a study delay and just take everything at my own pace. But by the time that happened, I was already I was just blocked. I couldn't do anything anymore. And I refused to go to school anymore. I didn't want to get out of bed anymore. And that's when I got my diagnosis. My sister studied psychology, and she started mentioning, because I had a lot of difficulties with also emotion regulation, that she suggested that I might want to look into the autism thing a little bit more. So that's when I started to go to the psychologist that I was already seeing, and saying if she had ever thought about autism or Asperger's. It was still Asperger's then.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, well, maybe that could be possible. So I went into the whole testing routine, and then they gave me my diagnosis.
Do you think that you being female had anything to do with the fact you weren't diagnosed with Asperger's to begin with?
Definitely. I come from a very social family that... we talk a lot about issues, about feelings. We are a very open family, and especially my mother and my sister are very, very social. And I just always remember looking at how my sister did things. And I just remember things when I copied my sister's behavior, or when my sister told me that I had to do something a certain way, that I just really remember that. For example, my grandparents used to give us pocket money. Is that the word?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, pocket money. And I remember that at one point, I think I must have been 7 years old, so my sister must have been 11, that my sister said to my grandpa, oh, grandpa, you shouldn't have, and you don't always have to give us pocket money, and it's not necessary, but thank you so much. And she was like very, in my opinion, like refusing it to be polite. And that's when I thought, okay, if somebody gives you something, you have to refuse. That's polite. So every time my grandpa wanted to give me pocket money, I didn't want to take it anymore. Because I thought that was impolite.
A genuine refusal,
to accept it. Yeah. Yeah, things like that. And I remember also with my sister had a lot of friends. She was in a hockey team, and she was very social in high school. And I remember her bringing friends over, and that I was always looking at, first of all, I was not even looking at it. I was just not even aware of the existence of social rules until she started pointing these kind of things out to me, like, hey, that's mean, you shouldn't do that to me. For example, when she gave me a present and I got angry, and when I got angry, I used to destroy things. One time she had given me lollipops, and then I got angry after a couple of hours about something completely different. I don't even remember what it was. And then I threw the lollipops out of the window into the backyard. And then after we made up, she told me that she was very sad that I had done that. And I said, yeah, well, I was angry. And she said, yeah, but even if you're angry, you don't just destroy the things I gave you. And then I was like, okay, that's a rule. You don't destroy things even when you're angry. You don't destroy other people's things. But I also used to just look at how she talked to her friends, how she would, when somebody, even now, she's still like an example to me social wise. She used to say to her friends when they said like, oh, I'm going to do this and that the weekend. And she was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, okay.
That's a response when someone tells you what they're doing. Like,
oh, that's nice. That's nice. Yeah. Are you looking forward to it? I mean, yeah, often when I tell people, I feel a little bit weird about it, because it sounds like, it is like as if I have a script for social things. And then people say, but is it then really you? And I think it is, because I am interested, and I do want to be friendly. I just never knew how to do that. And now I have the words that I can use to do that in a socially acceptable manner. And normally I would just ramble. I remember, even dating my current boyfriend, that when I was chatting with him, that he'd say like, am I in an interview? Why are you asking me all these questions? Am I in an interview or something? And I heard many people separately say that to me, that if I'm trying to be interested, they feel interviewed.
Yeah.
I'm asking way too many questions.
Like an interrogation.
But otherwise I feel like I'm talking about myself too much. And if I'm telling a story, even to a close friend, I apologize after that for taking too much talk space. Because I feel like, oh, we've been talking about me so much now. I feel so rude. I have to make up for this.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm constantly aware of how I'm navigating through social things.
I think it's the level of hyper-awareness then also makes us more cautious, which then makes us become less social. It's a never-ending battle.
Right? Yeah.
So... Is your sister older or younger?
She's 4.5 years older.
Yeah, so you've had her to like guide you as you've been going. Wonderful.
I'm glad she's older, so it feels natural to me, because she's older, she's wiser. It doesn't feel like she's because she's older, it just feels natural for me to look up to her in that way.
Yeah.
It's not like, that I'm jealous, that she...
You're the normal one, so I'm just copying you. It's just it's a typical sister relationship.
Yeah, and in my case, it even came more in handy than to most people, but it never felt unnatural to me to see what my sister was doing.
That's good. So when you received... on.
No, I'm a complete different personality than hers, but... when I want to be nice, thanks to her, I know how to do that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's it. Just I'm more sarcastic sometimes, and she is, more sweet, I think, or at least, I think we're kind of the same in that, but she knows how to, be more sweet. And I sometimes forget how to do that. And then I'm like, oh yeah, she knows how to.
Yeah. So do you go to her for advice now a lot, now that you're older?
I'm not even, yeah. If she has not approved of a thing, I'm not doing it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It even came to a point, Kike is a Dutch word, Kike. My sister is a psychologist, and so she is very aware of this right now. So she tries to help me with it and gave me the confidence I need to do things on my own. But when I was a teenager, I was not even, how do you say that?
Independent?
I was too afraid to text the guys I had a crush on. When I was having, when I was texting them, sometimes she even made the text.
Yeah.
And I simply approve, and I always approve because her texts were the best text in the world.
Yeah.
And my texts were too direct, too fast. Don't be desperate. Don't be needy. So there were a shitload of rules that I just didn't understand how to text a guy. And at some point, I'm still afraid to send important emails or to reply on things or to handle situations that are indirect, like emailing, texting, Facebook. And I always feel the need to show it to her before I can send it. I never send anything back to anybody on my own because I'm just too afraid. And I know that I can write good emails, good texts, but I'm just too insecure about it.
It is something that I struggle with as well. Like even today in work, I had to email a director of the company, but mm-hmm. I had to get my direct supervisor to check over it. And she's like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. I was like, yeah, but I could so easily offend him because I don't see, I don't see his position as power. He's just another person and I need an answer. So I'm going to ask him the question. I mean, there has been times where she's been like, recall that email right now. Recall it. I'm like, why? She's like, well, you can't speak to them like that. I was like, well, they've not paid us. So we need money. I'm going to ask them for money. Like, I don't need reasons. I need money. And he's like, oh, God. But yeah. So
the people I've insulted unintendedly.
It's a long list. So the reason that I got you on the podcast today is to talk about medication. So when did you first start taking medication and what was it for and what's your experience been like on it?
That's quite a story. I was, when I was diagnosed, I was 21 and I had been recently before that. Short before that, I was in a relationship that was very difficult for me. It was also a very difficult time. And I got into a lot of fights with that boyfriend and things started escalating. I started to break things. I started to have anger explosions where I would just scream in the middle of a train station if I got upset by anything. And so I was really, my first wish was to fix that as soon as possible. And that's when I also was kind of in a hurry with getting my diagnosis because I wanted help as soon as possible to actually save that relationship and save who I, in my opinion, had become a person that I was very ashamed of. And I was just too angry, too frustrated to handle myself anymore. I would break my chair. I would hit the wall. I would throw a mug full of tea through the living room. I was just not having a good time. And so when I got my diagnosis, the first they interviewed me for my diagnosis, they of course asked me what my issues were. And I told them this. So they immediately suggested that I should take medication to calm down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they were, I remember very well, my mother was there, and they said that they were afraid to suggest it. They said that they were afraid they were going to drop a bomb, figuratively speaking.
Yeah.
And they said, but I was very keen on trying that because I was just about to do anything to make that behavior stop. So they prescribed me Risperdal, which is an antipsychotic.
Okay.
Are you known with antipsychotics?
No, I know what antipsychotics are in general, but I don't know what that one is specifically. So for me, and like
No. But you do know that they are sometimes prescribed in a very light doses for people with autism to calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
So I got a really low doses of that to just help get rid of the busyness in my head mostly. Well, that worked pretty fast, although I was
experiencing
some side effects. Mostly I gained a lot of weight really fast, and I did not want that, so I immediately shifted into another one, but I didn't feel that that one was helping. So after a while, I was they found me the right one, and I think I have been medicated for 10 years totally. Okay. And I think I used that one for quite a while. What was the name again? Orab. It was the name Orab. And at that point, I also dropped out of art school, and I went to live in a student's house because I wanted to live to have a place for myself. And all the support that I got from my parents just instantly vanished, of course, because I wasn't living with them anymore. Mm-hmm. And they tried to support me from outside, but I was we all really didn't know what to expect. And also I was very shortly before that diagnosed, and we really didn't know what was going to happen. So after looking to it afterwards, I would say that we didn't make the right decision there. I didn't want to come out of bed anymore. I was constantly tired. I was doing nothing anymore. I was just doing nothing.
So was it the medication that made you tired?
I really don't know. We all don't know. It was also because my external routine just completely, the structure I used to get from home, from living at my parents, was completely gone. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to cook. I mean, I could cook some simple meals, but that was way too much effort for me. I went to the supermarket once a week, and there I would get seven one portion doses of fruit milk.
Yeah.
That would be my lunch. And wow. For the evening, I would get 8 cans of soup and 8 oven bread with something like spread cheese. And that would be my dinner. So every day the same. I'm still in touch with some of the students that also lived in that house with me, and they can still remember that all day long, I would just be in bed and only come out to eat my soup and bread every day. So I started to go back to my parents again, every time a little bit more, sometimes even for a week. And eventually I gave up the apartment in the student's house because I was just not handling the lack of structure. I was just completely not doing anything anymore. I just couldn't even get out of bed. And I think maybe afterwards it was a combination of the two, because I was also getting really tired of the medication. But the psychiatrist said that it would be a good idea to also prescribe me antidepressants because I was getting a little bit sad from doing not that much. And so I was on two types of medication, and I tried to find work. I did a makeup artist school. I finished that though, but it was only one time a week that I had classes for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one thing I did achieve. But every job I tried, I immediately quit or after a couple of months because I was just not able to get out of bed or to fill in my day. I was not able to do anything. I was completely, I would say, drugged. But I didn't mind that much because it was quiet in my head. And I was, I lived together with my ex-boyfriend back then. And he was taking care of the household. He was taking care of the income. And I was just basically doing nothing.
I love how open you've been about your experience.
I'm sorry.
I love how open you've been about your whole experience, because a lot of people who advocate for medication don't mention the bad, because that's what everyone who opposes medication, that's all they focus on. So the fact that you're able to talk about both sides and the positives of being on medication as well, that you were quieter in mind and that did help you get through the day a little bit more, but just there were other things going on in life which then meant the medication wasn't working as well as it could. How does your life look like now that you are still on medication?
I'm not on medication anymore.
Why did you make the decision to come off?
Well, because I was not able to do anything anymore, and I was still not very sure what the cause of that was. Because they also said, if you go to work again, you'll probably have more structure. So I was trying to do some volunteering, and eventually I found a job as a school assistant, as a teacher's assistant, which I studied for. And I was still nothing could motivate me. Nothing inspired me. I was not passionate about anything anymore. I've been together with my current boyfriend now for 4 years. We're living together, and there was also the question was rising whether we wanted to have children one day or not. And I was just like, I'm in a very steady mode. We bought a house in last September, and I was like, maybe this is the right time to see who I am without those medications. So I saw my psychiatrist. I see him once every half year or once every few months if there's nothing wrong. And so I told him that I wanted to quit. And I was on the lowest doses possible. And it was in December last year. And he said, okay, quit. I was on the lowest dose anyway. So he said, you can just quit. And that was hell. It was complete hell. I couldn't sleep anymore, not at all, for a couple of weeks. I would sleep sometimes an hour in daytime, sometimes 1 or 2 hours in the night, but not as a whole. So sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes half an hour. I was suddenly sweating in the night. I had to change my t-shirt like every 2 hours in the night because I was sweating so much. I lost a lot of weight, 13 kilos in total.
Wow.
Yeah. I was confused a lot. I would even say sometimes so confused that you could say that I was kind of losing it. I was just, it was very bad. I got OCD tendencies, like skin picking, hair picking. I could do that for hours and hours and hours straight. I was getting a little bit obsessed by things again. It was really, it's been very rough. I got really busy in my head. I was busy in my head the whole time. I couldn't focus on anything anymore. I couldn't even read a normal page in a book anymore. It was hell. And I was like, what is going on? What is happening to me? Is this how it's going to be? Is this who I was when I was not medicated? So,
how long did this go on for?
Well, it's August now. At this point, I lost the 13 kilos and it's still adjusting, but it's going a lot better. I think I finally found my balance again. But it's been very, very rough. There were times that I was thinking, I'm going to get into a psychosis now, because I felt so out of this world sometimes. Especially in the night, I was completely losing it. I was under the impression that the world I was living in was not real, that I was living in the matrix, all kinds of funny thoughts. But yeah, I stayed with 2 feet on the ground, fortunately. And it's balancing out now. I guess I'm pretty much back to who I wanted to be. Yeah. And a while ago, I went to see the psychiatrist again. I usually take somebody along when I go see him. And this time I took my mom. Sometimes I take my boyfriend, but this time I took my mom. And I said, yeah, I eventually also want to quit the antidepressants because those are apparently the ones you really shouldn't take if you're thinking about having a child. So he said, well, let me see. He had a certain, how do you say that? Stencil?
Yeah.
Like a piece of paper. Like,
guidelines, like a rule, like, I don't, checklist?
Yeah, more like a schedule?
Yeah.
Where you put numbers in and stuff?
Oh, yeah, like a survey.
I don't know.
Okay, anyway, go on. We'll work it out.
And he said that he was going to look at the neurotransmitters that the antidepressants work on, and if they would be the same neurotransmitters that the antipsychotics had worked on, and something about enzymes. And is that the right word? Enzymes? Enzymes?
Enzymes. Yeah.
What? I'm sorry?
Enzymes.
Enzymes. Oh, yeah. That's a funny word. So because if they would be working on the same ones, it would be wise to wait a little bit and not to mess the same ones all up again.
Yeah.
That's how he explained it to me. So he was looking at the piece of paper where all the information was on, and then he was like, oh, hey, that's weird. That's funny. So I was like, what's funny? And he said, well, what I see here, side note, he is not the one who prescribed me these medicine, because that one retired, and I also went to other psychiatrists because, yeah, I don't know, practical reasons.
Yeah.
I changed the institution I got my psychiatrist from because I was living in another town. So anyway, this was not the psychiatrist who prescribed me any of these medicine, but he was the one I quitted the antipsychotics with. And then so he looked at the formula and he said, hey, that's funny. I can see now that the antidepressants you take have a very, very big influence on the antipsychotics you used to take. So that would be, I was taking 0.5 milligram of the antipsychotics.
Yeah.
But he can say that with the antidepressants I took along with that, you could say that was comparable to taking 4 milligrams of the antipsychotics. So that would be 8 times the dose I was thinking I took. So that explains a lot why quitting had been so difficult and why I felt so completely drugged for such a long time, and why I was so tired and so unable to pick up anything, to do anything. So I was basically taking the doses of a schizophrenic person, and I think, and yeah, that really bothers me a lot, because I feel like I've wasted 10 years, and if I see what I'm capable of now, I go to work. I'm interested in music again. I'm interested in reading again. I'm being creative again. I'm enjoying life again. I feel like I've woken up after 10 years. I mean, it's been nice to have a little quiet in my head sometime, but this was not worth it. I really feel very sad and very angry, actually, about how the past 10 years have been, and because nobody checked the co-working of the two medicine I used to take, because together they made me completely drugged, apparently, afterwards.
I'm actually in shock that no one thought to check that.
I was thinking maybe it's new information, maybe these are new insights, but of course I don't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Potentially, yeah, it could be. But
yeah.
Now that you aren't taking medication, what do you do to quiet your mind at times when things are a bit crazy? Well, crazy is the wrong word. Busy.
It's crazy. You can say it. Crazy is the exact word we're needing. I still take the antidepressants because it turned out that they were working on the same neurotransmitters. So I'm quitting those end of September. Then I have a new appointment with my psychiatrist and we're going to look into quitting them. Mm-hmm. I'm very, I really wonder how that's going to be. But how I am quieting my mind right now, yeah, well, sometimes I'm just not. And then I get really stressed and really agitated and really angry and really cranky a lot. What am I doing to calm down? I'm not, you know, it's a whole new way of adjusting to things. I need to calm down at moments I didn't used to have to calm down because I was taking these medicine. So I guess I'm just really, first of all, I can handle a lot more now. But yeah, it's discovering my boundaries again. And that's a very big challenge, I would say. So I guess I'm just, I'm looking, I have a paper agenda that I write everything in that I'm going to do. I write everything down that I have planned. And afterwards, I also write down what I did. Mm-hmm. And I just try to build in quiet time, a lot of quiet time. I still need a lot of sleep. Mostly we go to bed at 11 and I wake up at 9 or 10. So that's still a good 10 hours mostly.
Yeah.
I need to watch what I eat because I'm very sensitive to getting hungry.
Okay.
Or something. When I get hungry or thirsty, I cannot function anymore. So I also need to make sure I have some food with me all the time, some water. It's very crazy things that I also do to get through the day. I mean, if I'm going to walk a lot, I wear different clothes than when I'm going to sit a lot, because if I'm going to sit a lot, I cannot have my pants or my skirt too tight around my waist because then I get irritated by that. And
yeah,
if I walk straight up, I don't have to think about that because then they are not tied in my waist. Yeah. I even think about how comfortable my socks are and if I can last with them for the whole day. I even think about how tight I fix my bra in the back, because tighter is better, they say in the shop. But if I wear it too tight, I get too agitated at the end of the day and I just go to a public restroom and rip them off. I mean, so yeah, I like to wear fancy clothes, but I cannot wear them too long because then I just get overstimulated by wearing them. So if I'm going to have a long day, I just make sure that I wear simple jeans and a simple shirt or something that is at least comfortable. So I'm very keen on comfortable and pretty clothes. It's also just getting through the day well. So I have to make sure that I have my food with me, that I have my water with me. I have a whole bag filled with life hacks, stuff that I'm going to need during the day that I cannot live without.
What's in this bag? Let me know.
What's in the bag?
Yeah.
Let me see. Where is it?
You can just describe it. It's all right.
Yeah, I have to see if I know it by heart. Of course, my paper agenda and a pen. A lot of hair stuff, comfortable hair stuff. If it's too tight, I get a headache. I have paracetamol in case I get a headache. I have a comb. I have lip balsam. I have makeup remover in case I'm fed up with my makeup during the day. I have an emergency makeup set in case I want to get it back on after that. I have bandages. I have hand gel, disinfecting hand gel. I have tissues. I have mints. I have a roll of, it's some sort of licorice. It's Dutch, but it's in case you get a sore throat, but it's just kind of a candy, actually. I have scissors because I need to, if I'm alone traveling in the subway or the train, I have a form of stimming that that I cut my hair. I cut split edges. I'm addicted to cutting out split edges out of my hair. I have earphones, obviously. I have a pair of sunglasses, obviously. I have most of the time some extra top in case I get warm or cold. I have a sweater. I have a lot of, and everything is in categories in plastic bags because I have a writing category, a makeup category, an earphone charger category. I have a biological grocery bag category in a bag because I don't want to use too much plastic. I have a hairbrush. I have a shitload of stuff. I have, and everything must be as lightweight as possible because I wear it over one shoulder and then I get a neck ache. So it has to be, am I forgetting anything that I'm bringing? Food. A lot of food.
Yes.
Water. I have these, do you know them? The Dapper?
It sounds similar to what I bring with me to work every day as well. Like, even when I was at uni as well, I just carry everything. Like, I can't, if I need one of those things and don't have them, my day is over. So I'd rather, like, everyone's like, oh, you're so prepared. It's like, no, this is just my basic needs.
I need this to survive.
Yeah, most people just need, like, their phone, their key, and their wallet. I need that, and then all of this.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting that a lot of the stuff is very similar. So what would you say to someone who is considering medication, given your experience on it?
I cannot say that. It totally depends on your own biological system, how you're going to react. I would say my one advice is look into it. Obsessively look into it. Inform yourself more than possible. Because I think medication can be very good if you... and in my case, it was a mistake was made and I suffered from that. And when I started just taking the antipsychotics in my head, I felt amazing. But I was also still feeling my emotions. I was not, like, how they call it, a zombie. But yeah, I don't know. It was also just a rough time. It was late teenage. I was an adolescent. I was coming of age, I was becoming an adult. So it's really hard to say what is the medication and what is just my own normal me developing. But looking into it and read everything you can find on good websites, of course, and ask around and ask if you are going to take two drugs together or, well, yeah, two medications together. Really try to figure out. Also ask the pharmacy, because they will know too if they affect each other, because that's in my case where it went bad. But I don't think medications are a bad thing. I think I am at a point right now where I can live without them, and I'm very happy and thankful for that. And I would always say the less meds, the better for your body, but some people don't have a choice. And I know how a busy head can feel like, and I know how being very sad for a very long time can feel like, and I know the struggle is real. So I understand that you want to try medication, and I think they can be a very good thing, but really look into it before you start, and don't just take something because the doctor says so, because they have all the good intentions, I'm sure of it, but also doctors can make mistakes and overlook something. So I think that is very important.
That was really, sorry, what was I going to say? What am I trying to say here?
I don't know, darling.
It's a very well put and great advice, because like you said, it, in the same way you can't tell someone they're not autistic or they don't have Asperger's, is the same way you don't know how they're going to react on medication. I was offered medication when I was 16. I was offered antidepressants, and my parents made the decision for me not to go on them, which now, to be honest, I am glad I didn't, because although for about 4 years I was miserable, and it was a hard time, and though antidepressants aren't a quick fix, they are a considered choice.
Mm-hmm.
Going through that phase, I now know what it feels like to be that sad, and how, if I'm slipping down that path again, to check myself and do things to not get there. So whereas I feel if I hadn't have felt that feeling, then I wouldn't know how to cope if it did happen again. I'd just jump back onto the meds.
You learn from it.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think that if it also makes me scared now. So if I have a day where I'm sad, I get scared I'm going to become depressed. And so I'm living in this constant fear of depression, which then makes me anxious. Which is then, it's a balancing act, and I guess.
It
is what it is, and we just all have to come up with our coping strategies and have supportive networks around us. And it sounds like your boyfriend's there for you and your family as well. And we just...
I'm very lucky with that.
Yeah, blessed. So in terms of your... What's the word? Friends, like, how did they react when you told them about your diagnosis?
I was in art school then, and my friends obviously knew that things were difficult for me. I had three close friends by then. It was a very difficult time. Like I said, I had a lot of struggles with myself. I was exploding a lot, getting angry, screaming, stuff like that. And then I got the diagnosis. Also the diagnosis itself confused me a lot, because I was very happy that I could finally play some things, but it also, for my feeling, shifted my identity a little bit. Who am I? What does this mean? What is this going to mean? I always thought that I was just lazy or annoying, and now it turned out that something was wrong with me. But I always thought if I just work harder, if I just try better, if I just make more effort, I will be able to do that school, that study, that thing, that job. And then it turned out that I might yeah, it would be harder than I thought, because I always thought that I was just lazy, and it turned out that there was really something slowing me down a little bit, or well, a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I got frustrated by that a little bit. And yeah, I remember that it was a difficult time, and that there was a moment in school, my friends were from art school too, that I got very angry about something, but it was not really related to them. I was just angry because I couldn't find the right classroom, and I just got frustrated, and I don't really remember what I did. I didn't hurt anybody, but I think I hurt a chair, and I went to the bathroom and cried and screamed in there. And my friends were there, but they left. They also didn't try to help me, and they left. So I was there in the toilet by myself, crying and screaming and kicking and everything. And well, later that night, one of them, the one I was closest with, called me and say, "Hey, are you okay? What happened today? What was wrong?" And she was actually being very sweet. And I said, "Yeah, I'm okay," and stuff like that. But from the other two, we didn't talk that day anymore, and also not the next day. And then I figured out that they were angry at me because, they were not used to having fights with friends. And I was like, this was not a fight. This was not about us. It was not like there was not an issue with you guys or with me about you guys. It was just me being frustrated about something. But they made it very personal to themselves. And I really, from the first moment, I told them this was not about them. I was not angry at them. It was not pointed at them. But I was just frustrated. And I was like, yeah, I told you that these things could happen. And I know that you don't always have to accept everything. But it just, they knew the deal. And then they were always very supportive about everything. And then suddenly this happened. And it was like, apparently I crossed a line. Although I still really don't understand why it personally affected them. But anyway, after that, the friendship was completely over. They didn't want to be friends with me anymore, and also not with the girl who supported me, because she and I are still, we've been friends for a very long time after that, and we are still in touch. We're not that close anymore, but we're still kind of friends. But the other two girls, they completely dropped me. So yeah, that's how they reacted.
That's such a shame. Like, the people aren't willing to be not even open-minded, but just listen and see a situation from someone else's point of view.
Well, I don't expect people to just suck up my shit.
Yeah.
But actually, this might as well happened at my own home, and I would have told them about it. And from my point of view, that would have been the same. They were there, but that was the only relationship they had to the situation, that they were there, but it had nothing to do with them. And I mean, if there were issues before that, they should, yeah, I would have liked it if they would have just talked to me about it, and or talked to me afterwards, like, yeah, this has also been difficult for us, and this and that has also been difficult for us. So then I could have done something with it, could have done something about it. But this was just completely, oh, you're screaming in the toilet right now? We're not friends anymore. I mean, I know when I, that I can hurt people sometimes, that I can hurt people's feelings. But in this case, I really didn't understand what their point was. And I mean, if I would have thrown a chair at them, or if I would yell or be mean to them, of course. But the only thing they had to do with it is that they were there. So, yeah, that really surprised me a lot, because we'd been very close friends for almost 2 years by then.
Wow. So moving forward now to a life with people who are a bit more caring in it. Moving forward to a life with people who are a bit more caring in it. What do you think's next for you, and what challenges do you think you'll face with your Asperger's?
autism diagnosis?
Yeah, every life phase has challenges. Mm-hmm. Actually, because since I quit my medication, I kind of feel like as if I have my strength back, my passion back, my energy back. So I'm kind of looking into studying again to be a teacher, like not just a teacher's assistant, but to be a teacher. And I want to study Dutch language, maybe to be a Dutch language teacher. And so I'm kind of looking into that right now. Yeah, we bought the house last September, and yeah, maybe we want to start a family someday. But yeah, I'm also really happy with that I have my old self back, and I really want to enjoy that a little bit more before I start the whole children shebang. So I'm kind of still putting that on a little hold. So I just really want to enjoy how I feel at the moment, and that I feel better. And of course, I'm still, like most people, I think, challenged in a lot of ways, but I have a positive view on the future at this moment, and I'm hoping that I can go study again.
That's great. Well, thank you for filming with me today, and I really appreciate you taking the time out, even though you're on holiday.
So there we have it, a wonderful conversation with Ono, in which she offered an insight on as to what life is like on medication and generally adulting with autism. She has actually recently got engaged, so congratulations to you and your partner. Again, that podcast was recorded, I think, about 3-4 weeks ago now. So yeah, she was wonderful and took the time out of her holiday to record this episode for us all. Had work and then forgot we had to record. And just, you know what? I'm not here to give excuses, because I do want to do this and this is great. And I just wanted to explain to you why it sounded a bit shitty and why my brain... You were clearly here. I was struggling. The next episode will be out on Sunday, and hopefully I will not be as shit as I sounded in that one. But thank you for listening. Don't forget to... like if you're on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you're listening, as well as drop a comment if you can. It really, really does make a difference. And I need feedback. I need to know what direction to take this in. We are pretty new. I'm rambling now, but bye.